active, probably because of his bloodthirst rather than anything real. He cleared his throat, trying to banish the annoying lump that had formed in his throat. "All right," said Katie. "Let's do this." Chapter 40. The angle on which Jack had been handcuffed to his headboard posed a bit of a problem. Katie tried sliding onto the bed next to him, but Jack's arms couldn't twist in a way that let him bring his mouth into contact with her neck. She frowned and swore under her breath. "I'm going to have to sit on you," she said. "Again, just as a reminder, please don't do anything fucking weird to me if you can help it."
"If I can help it?" asked Jack.
"It takes two to tango."
"I'm not sure that saying applies here," said Katie.
"Let's just both be super careful." She shifted position, straddling his chest, and then sliding down to sit on his crotch to get the right angle. Jack did his best not to notice how good her butt felt against him, or the cute, slightly awkward way she set her hands onto his chest as she started leaning forward to bring her neck into his range.
"Just a quick bite," Katie said, sounding a little nervous.
"Just a quick bite," Jack replied. He inhaled her sweet smell, and it sent an excited rush through his entire body. Slowly, Jack brought his lips to Katie's neck. She shivered as they made contact with her sensitive skin. He hesitated for a moment, and then opened his mouth wide and pressed his fangs into Katie. The shudder his bite elicited out of her was far more pronounced than any of the other times she'd let him feed off her. Jack felt Katie undulating against him and was dimly aware of her fingers sliding through his hair. He forced himself to drink from her slowly, even though the fantastic lemony taste was coupled with an intoxicating euphoric rush. There was a profound intimacy to the moment that was only matched by what Jack had felt when Mira had first bitten him. Realizing that scared him a little, and he focused through the fog of his bloodthirst. He wasn't completely sated, but his symptoms were gone. He pulled back, licking the last of Katie's blood from the edge of his mouth.
"Oh," moaned Katie. "Mmm."
She kissed him before he could stop her. Her lips moved against his with hot urgency, and she held him in a tight, erotic embrace with the rest of her body. Jack kissed her back for a few seconds before managing to reel himself in. He turned his face away from hers.
"I'm finished, Katie," he said.
"Are you sure?" she asked.
"You barely took any blood from me."
She whispered her words into his ear, keeping her head turned so that her neck was still exposed to him. A sinking feeling came over Jack as Katie pulled back a little, rubbing her hands across his chest, rocking back and forth as she continued to straddle him.
"I need to control myself," said Jack. "I can't risk taking too much."
Katie seemed to come back to her senses. She cleared her throat and nodded a few times.
"I'm glad that you're thinking clearly enough to realize that," she said. "But I'm not sure if that quick of a bite is going to be enough. Let's do it again."
Jack frowned a little. Katie fished the key to his handcuffs out of her pocket and started taking them off before he could object.
"Katie," he said, "are you positive that the potion worked?"
"I'm the trained alchemist here, Jack," she said, wagging a finger at him. "Not you, and I feel fine." Katie casually slid the zipper of her catsuit down a few inches, low enough to expose a significant amount of cleavage. She was still straddling him and leaned forward as she undid the second handcuff, putting her breasts almost directly in his face.
"I think you should take a little more of my blood," said Katie, "since we're already here."
"You aren't really acting like yourself right now, Katie," said Jack. "And didn't you tell me that my bites give you some kind of head rush? Is that something I should be..." He trailed off as Katie started kissing his neck and then his lips. She pulled one of his hands into the unzipped portion of her catsuit, and he felt her naked breast underneath his palm.
"Trust me," she whispered. "It's okay. Just one more little bite. Please?"
Jack was already starting to push her off him when Katie pressed her neck onto his mouth. He sank his fangs in on reflex
and in an instant, they were in motion. Katie shuddered against him, sliding further out of her suit, until her entire upper half was exposed. Jack drank her blood at a furious rate for a couple of seconds before managing to get himself back under control, but the damage was already done. She gave him a deep kiss, her hands moving with frantic urgency, unzipping his pants and sliding them down. Jack's thoughts were a clouded mess, and she was the only thing he could see. He pulled her catsuit the rest of the way off and flipped her underneath him on the bed. He kissed her lips again, and then the spot where he'd bitten her, which made Katie gasp. It was so fast and aggressive that it almost felt like it wasn't really happening. Jack practically kicked his pants off and then pushed up into her with a single rough thrust. She was totally shaven, and Jack felt how smooth and tight she was as he pressed his shaft in as deep as it would go. He didn't know what to do with his hands. The anticipation had been building for so long that he almost couldn't hold it together. His hips knew what to do, however, and with each of his movements, he felt Katie responding, bucking upward, crying out, writhing underneath him. They were both intoxicated by different things. Jack by her blood, Katie by his bite. Adding sex into the mix only served to stir the pot even further. He grunted as he thrust forward, chasing his pleasure like a man vying for first place in a sprint. He took Katie with everything he had, not caring about the friction between their bodies or the amount of strength he was putting into each movement or the thin, beating layer of sweat that coated her naked breasts and made them glisten. It was noisy, but neither of them cared. It was infidelity, but it was happening. The concept seemed ridiculous to Jack in light of the way Katie's body felt against his. His heart was pounding out of his chest and aching at the same time. Pleasure pulsed through him like the first notes of a beautiful, brand new instrument. It was a moment that had been years in the making, so far overdue that Jack had started to doubt that it would ever come. He'd been so disappointed when he'd first come back to the island, more in the uncaring march of time than in himself or Katie or even the situation. But now, here she was, and he was getting all of her. The sounds she made, the way she bit her lower lip and fluttered her eyes, the way she felt from the inside and out. They kept in perfect rhythm with each other, their movements laced with desperate, intimate need. Katie still wasn't holding back vocally, alternating between passionately gasping for breath and letting out half-stifled cries of ecstasy. The only thing he could compare it to was the way the sex had been with Mira. Jack was an animal, and he'd been unleashed. The bed groaned underneath them, and Katie's breasts bounced in rhythmic, circular motions. Jack gripped her thigh with one hand, while the other caressed and explored her nudity. She was whispering something into his ear, but he was too caught up in the moment to hear it. Katie's cries slowly raised in pitch, and then her entire body tensed up as she reached her breaking point. Jack lasted only a few seconds longer, sensation exploding through him as he got off. They were both dripping with sweat in the aftermath, but neither of them let go, holding each other in a tight embrace. Jack slowed his breathing, and realization of what had just happened slowly dawned on him. "Katie," he said, "we probably shouldn't have done that."
"I guess," whispered Katie.
She let her finger trace the bottom edge of his back hairline and nuzzled her lips against his cheek.
"Katie," he said, "I'm done feeding. You should probably let go of me."
She immediately let go of him, pulling both her hands and face back with such a sudden movement that it almost seemed reflexive, or rather, as though she was obeying a direct command out of instinct rather than choice. Jack's heart skipped a beat as he realized what that meant. "Put," he swallowed, feeling like he could barely form words through the hard lump in his throat. "Put your clothes back on." Katie reached down to grab her catsuit from where it had fallen and started wiggling back into it.
"I know what you're thinking, Jack," she said, "but it's okay. Really, I don't think I'm enthralled. At least, not completely."
"Is that the truth?" asked Jack.
Or are you just saying that? She held his gaze for a long time.
I don't know, she said. Fuck, I don't know.
Jack ran his hands through his hair. He forced a smile, though it was so far from what he was feeling internally that it almost made him want to die.
This is what I'd been hoping for, he muttered.
When I found out that I'd be coming back here, being with you, like this, was all I could think of. But this isn't even bittersweet. This is just bitter. Bitter enough to make me sick to my stomach.
Katie didn't say anything. The reality of what they'd just done seemed to have finally reached her.
I'm engaged, she whispered in a scared voice. This, I don't know what to do.
Jack stood up. I do, he said. He leaned over and kissed Katie on the forehead. Stay here, Katie.
She didn't follow him as he left the room.
Chapter 41. Jack left the mansion with just his phone, his wallet, and his keys. He left his grandfather's duster behind, feeling as though it wasn't appropriate for him to take it with him. He called a taxi as he walked down to the bottom of the slope. It only took a few minutes to arrive, and the man sitting in the front seat seemed slightly familiar to him.
"Where are you headed?" asked the man.
"To the airport," said Jack.
"No bags or nothing?"
Jack shook his head. There wasn't anything he could have packed that would have prepared him for this. He climbed into the taxi's back seat, and the driver made a quick U-turn in the road and started heading in the direction of the airport. He didn't know if he was doing the right thing. Part of him abhorred the idea of running away, but he wasn't sure if that was the reality of his situation. He was removing himself from the island, from Katie's life, and from Ryoko's life. He was doing it for their sake, to give them a chance to live normal lives without the danger of being around him. He didn't know where he was going to go or what he was going to do when he got there. He tried not to think too much about what his grandfather would think if he could see him now. Maybe, for a vampire, a life of exile could still technically fit with the tenets of the Masterson Code, or maybe not. With the inheritance money in his bank account, Jack knew that he'd never struggle. He could make $13 million last a very long time, regardless of where he chose to live. He could live a happy, healthy life as a vampire. A life where he'd be forced to feed off someone every few days. A life full of value judgments about who deserved to be on the receiving end of his bloodthirst and how to cope with the inherent darkness of his vampiric condition. The taxi pulled into the airport's drop-off lane, and Jack passed a few bills forward to the driver before getting out. The airport seemed so much larger and intimidating after even just a few days on Lesteran Island. It was easy to see why so many people ended up living their lives within the small island's confines. Leaving was full of uncertainty, like stepping off a cliff and trusting that the water below was safe for the drop. He wasn't feeling sorry for himself. No, it was closer to the opposite of that. There was a cold finality to his decision, in the same way that a person might feel that's about to turn to a life of crime and never come back. It was liberating, as though he'd finally decided to swim with the current instead of against it. It was the middle of the night, and Jack was the only person outside the airport as the taxi drove off. He stood there for a minute, watching the clear glass entrance doors and knowing that there would be no coming back once he went through them. He took a breath and finally started forward. An arm looped through his, linked at the elbow, as though he was about to be led skipping away on a date. Jack stared at Mira, who had seemingly materialized beside him out of the empty shadows. She was smiling, and her red eyes were fixated on him with the intimate focus of a love-struck teenager.
"My sweet Jack," she whispered. "I am so happy for you."
Jack clenched his jaw and jerked away from her, knocking her back with his shoulder. She was wearing a clean white sweater over a purple skirt and tight black leggings, the same outfit she'd had on when they'd first met. He'd looked at her then and seen a pretty young woman with an elegant smile and long blonde hair. He'd looked at a monster and seen a maiden. He wouldn't make the same mistake again.
Why? Asked Jack. Tell me why you're so intent on ruining my life. This island could have been a second chance for me if you hadn't gotten involved. Mira furrowed her brow and pursed her lips together. She started toward him again, and Jack tensed up, bringing his arms into position to defend himself.
You ask me why, said Mira, but you don't realize that it's a meaningless question. Why does the sun rise and set? Why do the birds chirp, and why does the grass grow? Because this is the way things are supposed to be, Jack.
You don't get to decide the way things are supposed to be, he said. Mira seemed to ignore both his anger and tone of voice. She stepped in a little closer to him, moving slowly and leaving herself completely undefended.
I didn't know how you'd react to my last gambit, said Mira. You're so wonderfully unpredictable. So I waited outside the mansion. I thought you were coming to find me at first, but I like this even better.
You're obsessed, said Jack. This is insane. I don't understand what you want, Mira. And even if I did, I wouldn't give it to you. She closed the last stretch of distance between them, slowly pulling Jack into an embrace. His first impulse was to push her back again, but she brought her hand to his face, gently caressing his cheek and chin, and her red eyes held him in place.
You are still so young, whispered Mira. You don't yet understand how life works, how meaning and purpose form out of events and people. I loved Peter, even if he hated me, maybe even because of it.
I'm not Peter, said Jack. It was hard to get the words out while facing the overwhelming presence of her intense eyes. I am not my grandfather.
I know, said Mira, and that's why I'm so excited. With every decision you make and every word you utter, I become even more certain of it. You are what destiny has in store for me.
Are you even listening to yourself? He asked. You're out of your mind.
We can go anywhere.
Mira shifted her head to the side, breathing the words against his ear. Brazil, Thailand, Costa Rica. We'll settle somewhere off the radar of the order and live and be happy. And I'm not asking you to come alone. You can take Peter's apprentice and your maid too if you want. I want you to be happy, Jack.
That's what you think would make me happy? He asked. We'll both have happiness like we've never known, said Mira. This is our happy ending. It's like the end scene of a romantic movie. You're here at the airport, and I find you just in time. And now, after making it past all the obstacles and our own doubts, we can finally be together.
Mira squeezed his hand. She looked so earnest, and Jack had no doubt that she was serious about every word she'd just said. There was something broken inside of her, and she'd convinced herself that he could be the fix for it. Was this a result of how her relationship with his grandfather had ended? Did it even matter?
No, said Jack. I'm not going anywhere with you.
You can't just manipulate someone into your imagined fantasy of how things should be, Mira. And I'm not my grandfather, but I think it's fair to say that he would have made the same choice here. He pulled away from her, flexing the muscle that was his willpower as he broke eye contact with her. She'd come far closer to convincing him than he wanted to admit. She made his circumstances sound like an opportunity to have what he'd always wanted, and he hated himself for finding it so tempting. Mira seemed to consider his refusal for a moment. The smile didn't fade from her face.
I thought you might say that, she said, which is why I prepared a contingency.
She started walking by him, heading toward the airport's entrance.
Where are you going? Asked Jack.
A group of tourists is due to depart from Lesterin Island in less than an hour, said Mira. They're probably already waiting inside the airport. I'm going to kill all of them. Jack hesitated for only an instant before hurling himself into action.
He focused his blood magic, casting spectral hand in the shape of a lasso and casting the shadowy tendril around her. Mira smiled and let out a small sigh, not even bothering to counterattack. Jack tightened the ethereal lasso. Mira faded into shadow as it closed around her waist, reappearing a few feet to the side. Jack let himself feel all of the simmering anger he'd been keeping contained ever since she'd first turned him into a vampire against his will. He rushed forward, throwing a punch at Mira's face. He was fast, but she was even faster, and his attack missed by a wide margin after taking her dodge into account. He spun, trying to lash out with one of his legs. This time, Mira dodged behind him, draping one of her arms over his shoulder and cupping his cheek with the other.
"You are so outmatched," she whispered. "I've been a vampire for longer than you've been alive, Jack. You inherited what little power you have from me, your broodmother. It speaks volumes about both your confidence and your ignorance that you would believe that you stand a chance against me."
"I will kill you," said Jack through clenched teeth, "and you deserve it for everything you've done and everything you will do."
Mira laughed and planted a small kiss on his neck. Jack slammed his elbow backward, finally managing to catch her by surprise. Bone struck bone as the point of his arm connected with her ribcage, and Mira let out a gasp of pain. Jack immediately followed up, whirling around and summoning his spectral sword to slam forward through Mira's stomach. Or at least, that was what he tried to do. She caught the magical weapon within a coiled spectral hand tendril, holding it less than an inch from its intended destination.
"I can teach you," whispered Mira. "Or I can break you. The choice is yours, Jack."
"There is a third option." Jack pressed forward with all of his strength, trying to finish his strike. "You die here. I go back to normal, and Lester and Island can be safe again." Mira made an offended noise, and her expression looked a little wounded.
"It makes my heart hurt to hear you speak those words," she said. "Even Peter had the decency to keep his banter polite most of the time."
"That wasn't banter," said Jack. "That was a promise." He pulled back, slashing defensively and putting one of the pillars that reinforced the airport's outdoor overhanging in between himself and her. Mira disappeared from view for an instant, and Jack spun around in time to watch as she rematerialized behind him. She gave him a push. It was such a simple, basic movement that Jack didn't dodge as effectively as he should have. Mira's hands hit the front of his chest and went flying, landing in the airport's parking lot and rolling several times across the concrete. The friction of the hard ground made him miss his grandfather's duster. Mira materialized near him again, this time standing over him, projecting her dominance with her body. Jack slowly sat up, but didn't dare rise beyond one knee. He looked up at her and then saw a figure crouched in the parked cars beyond them. It was Katie, still clad in her leather catsuit, setting up her crossbow slowly to avoid making any noise.
"You can't win in a fight against me, Jack," said Mira. "Don't be stupid."
Jack took a slow breath, considering what Katie would need to get a shot off at a target that could basically teleport through shadows.
"You're right," he said.
"I'm right?" asked Mira. "Am I hearing this correctly? Have you finally come to your senses?"
"You've always been right," he said, "which is why it frustrates me so much to admit it. I am like you, Mira, in so many ways."
Mira crossed her arms, frowning at him slightly. Jack wanted to check on Katie's progress, but knew it would be too dangerous to look in her direction.
"Interesting," said Mira. "You're telling me exactly what I want to hear. Where has your rebelliousness gone? What happened to your fire?"
"Maybe you're just hearing what you want to hear," said Jack. "I came to the airport tonight to leave Lester and Island and never look back. What difference does it make if I leave alone or with you? I get the feeling you would follow me even if I somehow managed to slip away from you and onto a plane after this fight."
Mira let a pleased laugh, followed by a sigh. She extended her hand, and Jack accepted it, allowing her to help him to his feet.
"You do sound sincere," said Mira,
"but you must understand how difficult it is for me to believe that the will to fight has gone out of you so suddenly."
He could see Katie out of the corner of his eye. She'd set the crossbow up on the hood of a car, using it to brace for her shot, but the angle was wrong. Mira needed to be a step further back.
"Trust me," said Jack. "All of the fight has not gone out of me."
He pulled her into an embrace and let his eyes meet hers. For a moment, he forgot what he was doing, pulled in by the aura of her crimson gaze. She was beyond what any normal woman could be. The way she looked at him left no doubt in Jack's mind that if he gave her the chance, she would show him possibilities beyond his current understanding. For the first time since being turned into a vampire, Jack understood that choosing Mira was an option available to him. He could, if he wanted to, go down that road and see where it led. He kissed her, letting his hands get aggressive as they roamed across her body. Mira let out a pleased moan and let her tongue tangle against his. Jack squeezed one of her buttocks and took a step forward, leaning Mira into where she needed to be. Katie's crossbow made a sharp hissing noise as it released the silver bolt. Mira flinched, but Jack held her in place, risking his own safety by being so close. The silver bolt crossed the parking lot in an instant, slamming into Mira's neck and releasing a deluge of blood, a slightly deeper red than the color of her eyes. Mira let out a terrifying, gargling scream and slammed Jack backward. He hit a car and flipped over it, somersaulting through the air before coming down in a painful, tangled heap. He heard Katie launch another crossbow bolt, but it struck a car instead of its intended target.
"You!" screamed Mira. She was running away from them, and she looked more demon than human. Blood was streaming from her neck wound, staining both her white sweater and her face as she smeared it around in an attempt to hold the wound. Mira smashed through one of the glass doors and into the airport, disappearing from sight.
"Jack!" Katie was at his side, helping him. "Come on, we have her!"
"Katie," he said, "are you okay?"
The question was a loaded one, and he immediately felt bad for asking it right then and there. Katie wouldn't look at him, and he didn't know if it was because of how ashamed she was over what they'd done, or as a coping mechanism to keep from losing herself to the effects of enthrallment.
"Let's go," she said, ignoring the question.
Chapter 42. They sprinted after Mira, following an obvious trail of blood left in the wake of her escape. The airport was emptier than it had been when Jack had first arrived on Lesteran Island, with only a few staff members milling about their stations. They looked confused and a little horrified, though the sight of Mira running by apparently hadn't been enough to make them flee their posts. Jack and Katie charged after the retreating vampire. A man wearing the uniform of airport security took a step toward them as they rushed by and seemed to think better of getting involved.
"You're going to have to try to distract her so I can get another shot off," shouted Katie. "Can you manage to hold out against her for another minute or two?"
"She's wounded," said Jack. "It shouldn't be a problem."
They both slowed to a stop as they rounded the corner and entered the baggage claim area. Mira stood on top of one of the luggage carousels with a half a dozen wavering dark tendrils already extended from her body. Her expression was contorted with cold fury, and her tendrils immediately began flinging luggage at Jack and Katie with frightening force. Jack had to roll out of the way to avoid taking a suitcase to the head. He conjured his sword as he stood to his feet, swinging the black and red blade in time to deflect another flying bag away from him. Toiletries and clothing exploded outward as the sword sliced it open. Katie launched a crossbow bolt at Mira, but she threw herself sideways, dodging to the second luggage carousel. Jack sprinted toward her, swinging his sword at her head. Mira dodged, but he'd been expecting that, and immediately attempted to ensnare her with a spectral hand tendril looped into a lasso. Mira used a blood magic spell that he didn't recognize, a blast of purple and blue-white force
then knocked Jack backward and left a thin layer of frost on his clothing. He'd managed to get the lasso around her, but as he focused his will to tighten it, Mira simply dematerialized free, moving a few feet to the side. Jack rushed to his feet, trying again. Another silver bolt hissed through the air, this one only missing Mira's head by a few inches. How many bolts did Katie have left to spare? He needed to bring the fight to an end sooner rather than later.
"I won't forget this," said Mira, speaking through gritted teeth. "There will be a reckoning for this, Jack."
He didn't bother replying. Instead, Jack tried using Spectral Hand and Spectral Sword in tandem. He knew that he didn't need to ensnare Mira for the lasso to be effective. If he could force her into a spot within range of his sword, the outcome would be the same. Mira seemed to sense what he intended. She used one of her own tendrils to slide a large duffel bag across the floor, knocking Jack's feet out from under him. He tried to roll as he landed, but Mira grabbed him with more of her tendrils before he could. He screamed as he felt her pulling at his limbs, threatening to dislocate his shoulders or worse. Katie launched another bolt, and this one struck true. Mira let out a blood-curdling scream as the silver projectile pierced through her shoulder. She dematerialized, releasing Jack and briefly disappearing from their field of view. He turned to look deeper into the airport and spotted Mira sprinting toward the lone terminal.
"Come on!" shouted Katie.
They chased after her. Jack was able to double Katie's speed due to his vampiric physique. He could already feel a faint throbbing in the back of his head, and he knew that it was a side effect of his usage of his blood magic. His bloodthirst would be back with a vengeance, but for the moment, it took a back seat to finishing the fight. A new scream cut through the air. Mira had seized a confused flight attendant on her way to the lobby. She held the woman in front of her, one arm locked across the woman's throat, using her as a human shield.
"Hostage taking?" said Jack. "Come on, Mira, you're better than that."
"You're a fool," said Mira. "A fool? You would try to kill me? After everything I've done for you?"
Jack wasn't sure how to even respond to that. Her point of view was twisted, and even if the situation had been different, he doubted it would have made sense to him.
"Let the woman go," said Jack. Mira flashed a vicious, evil smile. Her face was still streaked with blood, and she finally looked like the monster she was.
"This fight is over," said Mira. "You both put up a commendable effort, but you've clearly lost. Leave now and live another day."
"She's going to feed on that woman the first chance she gets," said Katie in a low voice. "Probably drain her completely after the wounds I inflicted on her. We have to finish this."
"We can't risk it," said Jack. "We might be able to talk to her, come to some sort of compromise."
"Are you insane?"
Katie glared at him and then lifted her crossbow.
"I'm taking the shot. I can hit her in the head, and the woman will be too much of a distraction for her to move in time."
Mira's breathing was growing heavier and louder. She gripped the woman's throat, and Jack saw her baring her fangs and licking her lips.
"It's too risky," said Jack.
"It's not," said Katie. "I'm going for it."
Time seemed to slow down. Jack saw Mira smiling, apparently anticipating the attack and ready with her own counter. The woman looked terrified. Katie's finger twitched on the trigger of her crossbow.
"Katie!" shouted Jack. "No!"
Katie reacted as he said the word, angling her crossbow off to the side just as she launched the bolt. Mira threw the woman forward, into a position where she would have been caught in the crossfire had Katie's bolt followed its intended path. Jack caught the woman as she stumbled, cursing under his breath as he watched Mira getting away.
"Damn it!" shouted Katie.
She struggled to reload her weapon for a few seconds before giving up and hurrying after the vampire. Mira was slowed by her wounds, and Katie managed to close the distance and tackle her. Jack sprinted toward them, fearing the worst. Katie wrestled with Mira for a couple of seconds, being careful to hunch her shoulders up to protect her neck. She was about to put Mira into a headlock when the vampire dematerialized one final time, appearing on the other side of the glass window, looking out onto the tarmac. There was a plane in the middle of taking off, despite the chaos happening within the terminal. Jack watched as Mira sprinted toward it, leaping onto one of the tires just as it went airborne. He watched his broodmother clutching on for dear life as the plane ascended into the sky, vanishing into the interior as the landing gear folded inward.
"We were so close," said Katie. "We were so fucking close. Damn it."
Jack shook his head, unsure of what to do next. Airport staff and security were already doing their best to get a handle on the situation. He felt Katie pulling his arm, leading him down a hallway toward an emergency exit.
"No," he said. "Katie, I came here for a reason. I can't stay on Lesteran Island any longer. Not after this."
"You don't have a fucking choice anymore," she said. "This little incident is going to end up attracting the attention of the Order of Chaldea. Even if you got on the first plane or boat out of here, they would still put the pieces together and track you down."
"How can you be so sure of that?" asked Jack.
"I know how they operate," said Katie. "And trust, they won't overlook the fact that this encounter took place at the airport."
Jack sighed, unable to find much fault in her reasoning.
"And what happens if I stay here?" said Jack. "I can't keep biting you and Ryoko, especially not without a working anti-enthrallment potion."
Katie pushed him out the emergency exit into what remained of the night. The sky was already shifting from black to a dark purple, heralding the arrival of dawn.
"We'll be okay," said Katie. "The fight wasn't entirely pointless. I managed to pull this off her while we were wrestling."
She took out a small leather bag with a red drawstring and wiggled it.
"Is that pixie dust?" said Katie. "She didn't destroy it like I'd initially assumed. I was hoping I could recover your grandfather's staff from her too, but she must have hidden it somewhere."
Katie scowled, looking more annoyed by the loss than Jack felt himself, though it did set him a little on edge to think of the weapon remaining somewhere on the island for Mira to come back to. She was intelligent and unpredictable, a combination which left him doubting that she left it behind by accident. Katie led him to her car and wasted no time pulling out of the airport parking lot. As they drove down the street, the flashing blue lights of one of the sheriff's cruisers shot by them in the other direction.
"That's probably Bruce," Katie sighed. "I've put him through way too much tonight."
Neither of them said anything for a couple of seconds. Jack frowned, thinking about the way the last few hours had unfolded.
"You came after me," said Jack.
"I told you to stay at the mansion right after, well, you know."
"I don't think the unicorn sap anti-enthrallment potion was a complete failure," said Katie. She took a hand off the steering wheel and brushed it across her neck.
"I do feel something whenever I hear you give a command, but it's not irresistible. It's the same reason why I was able to shoot my crossbow when you shouted no, though I didn't quite have the willpower to keep it on target."
"You would have killed Mira's hostage if you had," said Jack.
"Yeah," said Katie. She sighed. "I think it will wear off once I start drinking the regular anti-enthrallment potion again."
"You're sure?" said Jack.
"No," said Katie. "But at the very least, the effects won't get any worse when you bite me from now on."
"Katie," he said, "I can still leave, you know. I've already done so much damage here. Maybe leaving the island would be for the best, even if the order came after me."
Katie slowed the car as they approached a stoplight, and she took the opportunity to look over at him. There was a strange glint in her eyes, a mixture of annoyance and a more vulnerable emotion that Jack couldn't readily place.
"You have one thing right," she said. "You've done damage, Jack. I don't know what's going to happen with me, with my life, with you. And if you run away again,
I wouldn't be running away this time," said Jack. "And I didn't want to run away before."
"I know. I'm sorry. It's just..."
Katie swallowed and took a wavering breath.
"I don't know what's going on with any of this."
"What do you mean?" She looked away from him. The stoplight turned from red to green, and it took her a second to realize it and put the car back into motion.
I don't know if it's just because of you feeding off me, Jack, she said. The way that I feel about you. He didn't know what to say to that. He didn't know if he was supposed to say anything to that. Where was the line? Was it fair for him to weigh in here, in a situation where a girl he cared so deeply about was struggling with emotions that might well have an unnatural and supernatural component? Jack, said Katie, I love you. I love you too. There was a silence left in the wake of their words. It felt like that moment, all again. The one Jack still remembered, when he and Katie had sworn their childish promises to each other so long ago. Katie pulled the car over, and the two of them just stared at each other. Neither of them said anything, and really, there was nothing to be said. He understood the situation, and he knew that she did too. Jack shifted in his seat, pulling her closer to him. He kissed her, and she didn't stop him. It went on for several intimate, blissful seconds before coming to an end. He caressed her cheek for a moment, and then snuck one more quick kiss, unable to resist. I'll stay, said Jack. Katie was silent for long enough to make his heart catch in his throat. I never wanted you to leave to begin with, she said. All those years ago, we were just kids back then, but you were still such a big part of my life. He squeezed her hand. Are you sure you aren't feeling the effects of the enthrallment? He asked, smiling at her. The Katie I know would have never started acting this sappy. Fuck you. Katie smiled back at him, and a slight blush came to her cheeks. I'm serious, though. There's work to do here, Jack. There's a long road ahead, and I want you by my side for it. I know, he said, and I'm here. Epilogue. The Lesterin Cemetery was a quiet, serene place. Jack took slow steps through the gate, unsure of how to feel. It was a bright and sunny day, with a slight breeze on the air, and it made for a strange contrast with his mood. He couldn't remember whether or not he'd been to the cemetery before, which didn't make any sense to him at all. Tombstones stood side by side in neat, even rows, and despite knowing for a fact that three of them belonged to his family, Jack couldn't recognize which ones they were. He was alone, and because of that, he took his time. The groundskeeper had apparently been lax in his duties, as the grass was higher than it should have been, and a few stray leaves and branches from the nearby trees had intruded across some of the plots. He picked them up and set them on the other side of the fence. Jack saw his grandfather's gravestone before he recognized it. Several wreaths of flowers were set on top of it, along with a couple of envelopes weighted down by small rocks. He assumed they were parting words that just couldn't go unsaid. His parents' graves were adjacent to his grandfather's plot, Andrea Masterson and James Farmore. They'd married but kept their own names, for reasons which Jack would now never have the chance to ask about. He sighed and crouched down, staring pensively at his mother's tombstone and feeling numb. So many lost memories. He was looking at the tombstone for the first time, or at least it seemed like it. How was it that he didn't remember coming to the cemetery for his parents' funerals? There wasn't even a hint of a memory, not even a trace emotion or phantom scent. There was nothing, and the blank gap in Jack's recollection of that entire period of his life seemed like a massive thing now that he was staring into it. Mom, he said. Dad? He smiled, wondering what they'd think of him now. He felt like a bad son for not visiting them sooner, though of course he'd had a lot on his plate over the course of the last few days. I miss you both, said Jack, and I hope. He wanted to say that he hoped they were proud of him, but the words wouldn't quite make it all the way out, and he was all right with that. He missed them both, even if he couldn't remember them, but part of him didn't want them to have a chance to see who he was now, and what he was now. Jack sighed and moved on, stopping in front of his grandfather's well-adorned tombstone. There were as many flowers on Peter Masterson's burial plot as there were spread throughout the rest of the cemetery. He was surprised, even though he'd already seen evidence of the man's popularity in the local community. And there was something else there, too. Something that had been missing from the downstairs workshop after Mira's raid. Peter Masterson's wizard staff had been carefully placed across the burial plot, with a red ribbon tied around one end. Jack frowned a little, unsure of what to make of it. Mira had found time in the midst of tormenting him to stop by the grave and return the staff to its owner. It was such a strange gesture, but it made perfect sense, coming from her. He set a finger against the staff and felt a jolt of power similar to a static electric shock. Jack pulled his hand back, deciding to leave it be. Peter might not need it anymore, but it still seemed to belong where it was, and few people would give the unassuming length of wood more than a glance.
Mr. Masterson? Ryoko's voice came from behind him at the edge of the gate. Would it be okay if I ran a few errands while you're here, if you're planning on staying a while longer?
Jack shook his head. No, he said. I'm finished. He stood up and smiled at Ryoko, making his way alongside her back toward the car. The end. This has been Blood Mage, Dark Impulse Book 1, written by Edmund Hughes, narrated by Aaron Bateman, copyright 2018 by Edmund Hughes, production copyright 2018 by Edmund Hughes.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.